This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. This is the fifth week we have been broadcasting this show, which is about as long as many of you have been working from home and practicing social distancing. You have asked us thousands of questions, and now we're going to answer some of the most common ones, the questions that have come up a lot in the last 5 weeks. Dr. Abrar Karan is with us once again. He's an internal medicine physician and clinical fellow at Harvard Medical School. He's also assisting with the epidemic response in Massachusetts. Good to have you back here.
Thanks so much, Ari. Good to be here.
And we're also joined by NPR's Ping Huang, who reports on global health and development. Nice to have you here as well, Ping.
Hey, Ari. Great to be here.
To start, Dr. Karan, I'd like to play two callers who had similar questions. Let's listen.
Hi, my name is Natalie Lekanchik, and I'm calling from Queens, New York. Is there a plan to move those at the beginning of the virus into a low-level hospital to prevent it from spreading to family members? Most apartments in New York City are small, with only one bathroom.
And in a similar vein, here's Carolyn Cash in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
What, if any, plans are in place for providing additional hospital beds and quarantine centers to help with containing COVID-19?
So we're talking here about people who are not so sick that they have to be hospitalized, but people who know they have COVID-19 and have no way of isolating from people they live with. What would you suggest?
This is a great question, Ari. I've been on service in the emergency room for the last 10 days in our COVID pod, and I have been seeing these stories in almost every single patient I've seen. It's really hard to isolate properly at home. One thing that we've been doing for patients that come in that have, as you mentioned, sort of mild symptoms or not sick enough to be admitted to the hospital in Boston is sending them to a program called Boston Hope, which is at the convention center here, and they have beds set up for these sort of lower acuity cases to help them prevent spreading it in their families and in their households. I know other cities are doing similar things using hotels, dorm rooms, and other spaces that can be repurposed. New York City and San Francisco are examples.
That makes a lot of sense since the hotels are not running and the students are not in the dorms.
Absolutely.
Is there even the capacity to house everyone who is experiencing symptoms but does not need to be hospitalized?
Well, you know, it's not that we need to do this with everybody, right? So some people may be able to safely isolate at home. So if you have your own separate room or a separate bathroom, but the vast majority of people won't. And we also will see that people who are, you know, poorer and are living in more crowded housing won't be able to do this. And it's really going to push our health inequities even further. So that's why it's so critical that we provide this space to people that that are going to need it the most, but it may not be every single person.
Okay. Well, another topic that we've heard a lot of questions about is asymptomatic cases. Barbara in the Bay Area writes, I would like to know more about asymptomatic carriers of the virus. Do these individuals ultimately contract the virus? How do we know they're carriers? Ping Huang, can you answer that for us?
Sure, Ari. And like you said, this is something that we've been hearing from a lot of people, a lot of questions about asymptomatic carriers. And I wanted to clarify something quickly in the question. So first of all, if you are an asymptomatic carrier, you have already contracted the virus. It's just that you're not actually showing any symptoms from it. And some people actually stay asymptomatic and they never actually get sick. But so far, most of the people we've found without symptoms are actually pre-symptomatic, which means that in a couple days, they end up developing coughs and fevers and other signs that they're sick from COVID-19. And we know for sure that at least some people who are pre-symptomatic can definitely spread the virus. Generally, it's considered for about maybe 1 to 3 days before they actually get sick. For example, there was a nursing home in Washington State where they isolated all the people who had symptoms, but the virus actually still spread very quickly through the home. And to researchers, it's a clear sign that it's spreading from people who were pre-symptomatic.
Which indicates why widespread testing is so important. Well, if you have a question for Dr. Abrar Karan or for Ping Huang, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or share it on Twitter using the hashtag NPRConversation. And Ping, we also have gotten a lot of questions over these last 5 weeks about whether the virus could mutate. Jimmy Schmitz writes, could the COVID-19 virus and influenza virus merge into a super virus that could be even more deadly? Setting aside that specific scenario, perhaps, what is the chance that COVID-19 could mutate, merge, transform into a way that makes it even more harmful?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing that the researchers have been saying so far is that they're watching the virus very closely, and it's actually mutating at a, you know, slow and relatively predictable rate, maybe one or two mutations a month. And it's actually pretty stable right now, which is good news for vaccine researchers. But I did actually want to address Jimmy's scenario directly, because I spoke with a couple of researchers who work in coronaviruses, and they said that it's highly, highly unlikely that COVID-19 virus and a flu virus could merge.
Okay. Not compatible.
They're not compatible. They're super different viruses. One actually told me that coronavirus and flu are as different as humans are to plants. And wow. They actually infect different parts of the cell. Yeah, exactly.
Huh. Thank you for doing that research
so the
for us.
Flu. It was actually really interesting. The flu, it turns out, it actually replicates in the nucleus. And the coronavirus, it hangs out in the cytoplasm, which is the part of the cell outside of the nucleus. And that's where that replicates. And so even if flu virus and coronavirus get in the same cell, because people can be co-infected with them, they would not actually directly interact with each other. And so they wouldn't recombine.
Okay. We've also gotten a lot of questions about smoking. Let's listen to this one.
Hi, my name is Wai Lee, and I'm calling from Antioch, California. My question about the pandemic is whether or not the virus itself is carried through cigarette smoke or through the vapors that come out from somebody vaping.
Okay, the question there was, is the virus carried through cigarette smoke or the vapor that comes out through vaping? Dr. Karan, what can you tell him?
Right, so this gets back to how much aerosols are emitted and how many respiratory droplets are going to be spread when you're exhaling forcefully like this. So I think it would be possible as you're sort of blowing out, you are going to be, you know, blowing out these droplets and other particles. With that being said, I also add that we know the harmful effects of smoking and vaping on the lungs. And so in general, I would advise against this, and especially during a pandemic.
And in just a minute or so before we have to take a short break, we have a question here from a listener in the Poconos in Pennsylvania that I think speaks directly to your experience, which is, it seems like now the issue is doctors and nurses getting sick. How can hospitals be managed effectively with the continual loss of these workers? I'm sure that's something you think about often.
Absolutely. Protecting our frontline workers is so critical. You know, they are putting themselves right in the line of fire to do the best that they can for patients. And so I think, you know, some things that have been done, other doctors from other services have come in to help to cross cover on some of the COVID floors. As you see in New York, there's actually been doctors flying in from other parts of the country to come help. I've been taking care of just COVID patients for the last several days, as I told you. And the key is wearing personal protective equipment and doing that very carefully. We have people that actually help us watch when we don and doff to make sure we're doing that to the best of our abilities. And so that's also very important.
Dr. Abrar Karan and Ping Huang, stay with us. We're going to take a short break. And if you have questions we want to help, go to npr.org/nationalconversation or on Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. You're listening to The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.